For WKU Public Radio, I'm Alana Watson. How do outside pressures like starting a family, going to college, getting that dream job, or buying a house impact young adulthood? Navigating the world while trying to meet exceptional societal expectations can leave people feeling lonely, inadequate, and guilty, as Owensboro, Kentucky native Rainsford Stauffer explains in her book, An Ordinary Age. I spoke with Stauffer about what it was like to write a book about the pressures of young adulthood while at the same time grappling with those kinds of feelings herself. We start our conversation with a synopsis of An Ordinary Age.
An Ordinary Age is a book of reported essays that look at the pressure to live an extraordinary best life in young adulthood, which is essentially the time for a lot of us that a bunch of different factors are coming into play where we're making life choices, we're figuring out what holds our meaning, we're figuring out what matters to us. And at the same time, a lot of us are doing things like entering jobs or becoming parents or moving or graduating from some form of school. And so it talks to young adults about different pressure points in their own lives, things like pressure to have a dream job or to make college the best 4 years of your life, as if everyone goes to college. And also things like loneliness and friendship and figuring out how to tune out kind of the noise of perfectionism and accept yourself as enough as is. And my favorite thing about the book is that I got to talk to so many young adults from all over the country, all different backgrounds, really all different ages throughout the late teens and the 20s, about their own experiences and how these pressures were manifesting in their lives.
So the title of the book is An Ordinary Age, Finding Your Way in a World That Accepts Exceptional. Do you feel that through your book, you're giving the generation, our generation, future generations, almost a template on one, how they can kind of break certain cycles? Because I know for me, when I was reading the book, I didn't even realize I was doing some of these things. And I was like, it was like an aha moment. And for the future generations coming in, it's like, you know, we don't want them to kind of get into this mindset, right?
I wish that I had enough power to create a guide and sort of dismantle some of these systems that I think do this to a lot of young people. But what I do hope is that the conversations in this book, the conversations with experts, with young people themselves, I hope they make everybody feel less alone in how awful it often feels to navigate these pressures, and hopefully kind of illuminate the structural forces driving a lot of them. Because I know it's easy to kind of get into the mindset where it's just me, I'm the only one that's not doing enough or feels like I'm not good enough. But turns out in a lot of cases, there's reasons that we feel that way. And I think the more open we are about that, the closer we get to solving it.
So let's break down some of these chapters. A waiting room, all about on the home and how to build it. Cracks on perfectionism and being enough. One of my personal favorites. Online and real life, which I feel like everyone can connect to. Chapter 2, for the experience. There are so many chapters. And I was curious, did you base these off of your personal experiences, or did these chapters come to be as you were interviewing people and you were getting these experiences that people were having?
That's a great question. And I think it was kind of a mix of both. I had been reporting on young adults doing other forms of work, not necessarily talking to them about young adulthood, but talking to them about higher education or work or organizing they were doing. So from those conversations and from my own experience, I knew there were certain beats that we wanted to hit, like work and kind of this idea of the first job and the internship and the dream job is such a big part of this time of life. College is still considered a really significant portion of this time of life. So there were certain things, places I knew we were going to go that I knew I wanted to talk to people about. And others emerged out of conversations where when I asked people, what do you wish we were talking more about in terms of being a young adult right now? What's on your mind? Those were the chapters that bloomed in being a surprise, honestly, and teaching me something new and illuminating something I haven't thought of. And it was things like loneliness and spirituality and meaning making, and where you take these bigger questions that we're kind of taught to avoid asking, like, do I matter in the world? And does it matter if I matter? And so I think it was a mix of drawing on other reporting to think of, okay, these are the things I know we need to talk about, and getting to be surprised and curious about what other young adults were bringing to me and saying, hey, this is what's happening in my life. I'd love to talk about this.
My first Oh, This Is Me was in chapter two. And it was Harper who said, my career has been my identity for so long. And so I lost all that due to COVID. What stood out to me is identity. Mm-hmm. And do you feel like you had talked to a lot of young people that were struggling with their identity? For me, you know, I've been dedicated to like my career. Mm-hmm. And so my career became my identity. And then for a lot of people who they don't have that quote unquote perfect career, their dream job. Do you feel like you had a lot of encounters in terms of that with a lot of the young adults that you talk to?
Oh my gosh. I think that identity and where we find it, what creates it, how we keep hold of it is the question of young adulthood. And I think it's one that even though people's circumstances are different and how they might be finding that is certainly different dependent on all kinds of structural barriers and circumstances, I think it's the question we're all at least trying to figure out how to ask. In terms of work specifically, I talked to people who kind of existed on both ends of that spectrum, people who had poured everything into their dream job, that really imagined it going one way, only to find not necessarily that they didn't like it, but that it really didn't feel as big an identifier as they kind of imagined it would. It didn't lead to them feeling like enough in their life. I also talked to people who, to your point, didn't know what their path was going to look like yet. They had maybe done things in school, if they went to school, that weren't really parts of their adulthood. It was a very transitional period, and even figuring out what the structure of their day was going to look like. Or they were working two or three jobs to try and pay their bills, and none of them felt like something they wanted to identify by. And so I think that that level of identity, negotiation and renegotiation, and figuring out what's my value and is it really work that's supposed to hold it? And who am I outside of my job or my accomplishments or the ideals I had of my life and how my life was going to turn out? I think those were questions that popped up in every single conversation.
If you had to choose, what do you think would be your favorite chapter, your favorite passage, your favorite interview?
Oh my gosh. Oh, this is the impossible question. I think the chapter on work probably taught me the most. I found myself really rethinking my own ideas of labor and ideas of productivity being tied to worth and capitalism a lot through those interviews. And so I think that that was very educational and illuminating in a way. I think personally, the ones that hit home the most were every interview I did with someone about how they created a sense of home and what home meant to them punched me in the gut. And perfectionism, I think, was the one that took the most self-reckoning. Perfectionism was the one that was hard to write, where I had to really make myself sit down and go some places that I hadn't gone before in my writing and frankly hadn't gone before in my brain. So I think that what they all have in common is the combo of being taught something and also being forced to look really closely at your own choices and your own habits and kind of how those have impacted certain parts of your life.
I know you don't have a crystal ball. I understand that. How do you think young adults will break away from societal norms? Do you think that they will, especially, you know, after reading your book or after them just kind of realizing I don't have to do life this particular way?
Yes, I think first of all, that's already started. And I think a lot of it has been driven by economic circumstances and societal shifts. We're already seeing things like the traditional milestones of adulthood, moving out, getting married, completing your education, getting a job. It's not that these things aren't happening. It's that the timelines on which they're happening are being reconfigured for a lot of people. People are thinking, well, do I actually want to get married? Is a four-year college right for me? What kind of career do I actually want to be in? And does it matter if it's a dream job? Maybe it's enough to just pay my bills. That's cool too. And so I think, especially coming out of the last year and a half, we are going to start seeing people in general, but especially young people, kind of reject the social script they've been given that just no longer matches the reality a lot of them are living in. Because when we talk about, you know, young adults being behind and failure to achieve these adult milestones, the question is always behind who? And I think that young people more and more are going to prioritize having agency in their lives, having value and self-worth that exists outside of their productivity, and creating, where they can, lives that are more responsive to them and what fulfills them, instead of trying to fulfill this sort of societal quota of what it means to be accomplished and together in young adulthood.
You are a young adult, and you yourself are still going through these things that are in your book. How does that feel? And you kind of already touched on it a little bit in terms of like perfectionism. Mm-hmm. How do you feel being a young adult, writing this book about the challenges that young adults go through, and still going through it yourself?
Oh, I love this question. And I've thought a lot about this because, you know, I think that had I waited until I was in my 30s, maybe in some ways it would have been a better book, just because even since the book is published, I've seen how my writing and reporting has kind of grown and changed. And I obviously hope to continue to learn and grow and change. But I also felt like there was something to be said for writing and reporting about it when you're sitting in the messiness of it. I think that just personally, it took so many things that I felt were broken about me or wrong with me, and really showcase that no, we're not in it alone as we're navigating all of this. Our circumstances and barriers are different, but so many of these feelings are the same. It's felt surreal to, as a young adult, get to do something that I never imagined I would do in my lifetime. The thought that keeps popping up is, I got to do this thing I never thought I would get to do. And that was made possible by the people who shared their lives with me. So with the rest of my life, whatever that ends up looking like, how am I going to pay that forward, especially in terms of making sure that generations after mine maybe don't have to navigate this extraordinary pressure?
What has been the response to your book? I don't think I've asked you that yet.
Yeah. You know, honestly, I haven't checked into it a ton. I know that there have been people on the internet, especially, that think young adults are all inherently lazy, and a lot of jokes about avocado toast, of course. But the part that has stood out most to me is that every time someone has said that they saw a glimmer of themselves in it, or it made them feel less alone, it just feels like my heart is going to explode. It's the greatest gift that I could imagine getting. I've also heard from a bunch of parents or older adults who have decided to read it with the teenagers in their lives, which I think is really cool. Just hearing from people describe how, you know, maybe it wasn't their exact experience represented in the book, but there was enough of it to make them talk about something with their friends, or reconsider how they created their home, or what friendships they prioritized, or think twice about where they find their meaning. I think that that response has just been astounding, because of course there's part of me that is shocked people are actually reading it, and that it's not just a Google Doc on my computer.
To you, what does it mean to be ordinary?
Ooh, I love this question. I think when I imagine ordinary, I imagine a sense of being enough, of feeling like enough, of feeling full, of being able to look around the different parts of your life and the people in your life and know that everything is there for a reason, and it's choices that you've made that matter because you made them. And so I think that for me, ordinary in the tangible sense is long conversations with friends who live in different states, and getting to hang out with my family and pets and community. It looks like bike rides and going on walks and baking. But in the more rooted sense, it means figuring out that, which is an ongoing process to figure out. It's definitely not like a box check, but that enoughness and worth don't come after you've perfected yourself first, that who you are right now, your most ordinary self, is someone worth being and a life worth living.
That was beautiful.
Thank you. Ooh, I'm okay. Sweating
not
so
crying.
Much.
Not crying. It's fine. Fine. Everything's fine.